Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. I'm Douglas Mpuga. This evening we'll look at the impact of COVID-19 on Africa's social and political situation. And with us tonight are my colleagues, Vincent Macquarie, Managing Editor, TV English to Africa. Vincent, welcome to the show.
Thank you, it's a pleasure.
And also joining us is Blessing Zulu of VOA's Zimbabwe service. Blessings, once again, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Douglas. The pleasure is mine.
You're very much welcome. Tonight we're looking at the impact of COVID-19 on Africa's social and political situation. There's been an increase in COVID-19 deaths across Africa since mid-July 2021, but the impact of the pandemic in sub-Saharan Africa remains remarkably lower compared to America's, Europe, or Asia. But still, the impact on the social and economic situation has been great, despite all this. Let me begin with Vincent. General assessment on the general impact of the COVID-19 pandemic.
You know, you have to factor in the level of development of a country when it's dealing with certain challenges like a pandemic. Now, across the continent of Africa, there have been obviously fewer deaths. There have been perhaps in some places fewer hospitalization because of fewer cases or known cases. So when you compare that to the rest of the world, Africa seemed to have been hit less severely. But when you look closely at the social fabric and the impact it has on the overall economic performance, and other aspects of the social fabric, you find that Africa has been affected very severely. For example, if you take education, when COVID hit across the world, one of the methods that was being used or that the countries resorted to in order to continue their education was using online methods of disseminating information, of teaching kids, having some virtual classes. When you go to many of the African countries, they had zero capabilities to continue virtual education for their students. So what happened in most of this, so many students were left out. The inability to go physically to school cut out so many students, especially in the rural poor of Africa, and therefore, as a consequence, there is a kind of a there have been within the same country, you find that some children, especially in the urban areas, the wealthy neighborhoods, continued with their education virtually. Their teachers were able to communicate with them through phones. They could actually connect in through the center assignments on the computers, and they could do their homeworks and continue their education. In the same country, students from poor neighborhoods, students from the rural areas, were completely cut off from this education. As a consequence, some of them did not continue their education. They have literally been left behind. They have missed a year or two of schooling. And for others who got bored and had nothing to do, they dropped out of schools. So we have had so many cases of young girls who ended up being pregnant, boys who ended up engaging in other activities that are not progressive at all, and not so much because of their fault, but because their situations, the circumstances in their country or their part of the country did not allow them to continue education just like the rest of the kids. And so globally, you find that our kids in Africa have probably been affected more severely than children in other parts of the world. So that is just one area. But also we may talk about the impact it has had on the economy when we consider the fact that African economies are based on small-scale activities. You know, it's a small-scale businesses, people who are basically traders on the streets, in the marketplaces. And many African countries did not have any plans or any strategies to really give some kind of a rescue, to come up with a rescue plan for these small-scale traders so that they can continue earning a living. And therefore, there are so many people who ended up having no income at all and being unable to feed their families. And therefore, poverty increased and poverty continues to increase during this period of COVID-19. And we will definitely continue expounding on that.
Blessing, what's your take on that?
Well, I agree with what Vincent is saying. Of course, there is also the impact on democracy itself, as some countries are locking down due to COVID-19. They are also locking down democracy. For example, in Zimbabwe, you know, though Zimbabwe seems to be doing very well compared to other African countries in terms of rolling out vaccines, there are elections that are due in nearly 90 constituencies because some MPs, especially in the opposition, were recalled. Others died since the pandemic started last year. But what the government then did was to say we are suspending all elections, you know, indefinitely. So since last year, there have not been any elections at all in Zimbabwe in you know, to replace councillors or legislators or members of parliament, as they are called there. But there have been elections, for example, in Zambia, in Malawi, South Africa. At one time, they wanted to suspend the elections because of the COVID-19, but the Supreme Court ruled that elections must be held. So that is another major issue in Africa, that the pandemic is now being used to suppress the opposition voices. So now, even if you want to demonstrate, you are simply told that there is a global pandemic and it is not possible to do so. And I mean, also, you look at the, like what Vincent mentioned there, the impact on the economy because of the lockdowns. You know, people are told to stay home. Many live from hand to mouth. Most economies rely on informal traders. And the African governments have not availed stimulus packages, as we saw in America and other developed nations, to assist the poor. So I think especially for those who cannot afford, the impact has been devastating.
I see. Vincent, let's explore more on this issue of the pandemic and the strangling of democracy. Some people have said the pandemic has given African dictators a very big weapon to use against their people. In some countries where they had elections, for instance, the opposition were not allowed to campaign, of course, citing the pandemic and fearing the spread of the virus. You can't gather, then you make people more poor, and then people have more. The more poor they are, the more they have to depend on government. Has this been a real gift to the dictators on the continent?
You know, without even mentioning specific countries and specific names, the truth has been that while some of the measures that were being taken would be seen as, you know, being you know, meant to protect the lives of the citizens, some in power have taken advantage of this to continue suppressing the opposition, but at the same time, you know, use this time, this really sad times that we live in today, to advance their own, you know, agendas. What happened is that in some of the countries we observed double standard in the application of the measures. So while, for example, during elections, the government insisted that there wouldn't be any gatherings because of, you know, concerns over the spreading of COVID-19, the same government refused to give those in the opposition, for example, the platforms that would enable them to reach the masses, for example, the national broadcasters. We know that in some of these countries, the media means everything. If you can't go to the people, if you can't have gatherings, the only other way you could reach out to the people would be through the national broadcaster, the radio and television. So while the incumbent and the ruling party could use the national broadcasting networks to reach the masses. The president or the minister could easily, disseminate whatever information or convey whatever message they want. They denied those in the opposition the right or the privilege. And so they saw this as an advantageous strategy, while at the same time, of course, claiming that they're keeping the people safe by curtailing, any public gatherings. And at the same time, some try to use this as a way to continue staying in the power by trying to postpone elections, extend their own terms. And so they were looking for a way in which to benefit themselves without going into a very specific country. But we have observed across the continent that it has been a struggle. While there were concerns, legitimate concerns about, spreading COVID-19, through gatherings of people in public rallies, we've seen those in power, those who are the incumbents, at the same time, find a way to go around the same rules that they set to their own advantage, but at the same time, deny those in the opposition, their opponents, the same platforms that would help them to reach the masses. Yeah, so there has been, as always been, politicians always try to find a way to take advantage of the situation to their own benefit.
I see. Blessings, but what you never hear from most of these African leaders is the inadequacy, the poor health infrastructure they had even for the pandemic. They never seem to say, well, we are not prepared not only for this kind of pandemic, for any healthcare facilities for the people.
In Africa, I don't know what to say, but what is rather disturbing is, or interesting, I don't know what to call it, that before the pandemic, most African countries were quite content to fly to European countries, to Asian countries, to seek for treatment. The late President Mugabe, for example, his eye specialist was in Singapore. So you would actually fly to Singapore just to have his eyes checked. So there was nothing that was being done to develop Africa's health infrastructure. But when COVID came, there was a time when, all the countries said we are not entertaining visitors, be they VIPs, what? So we saw a number of African, some African leaders and also some ministers actually died in their own countries. They came face to face, with the reality that the people had always been saying that the infrastructure was bad. So, it was a wake-up call for most African leaders that there is need. That is when many started actually tried to import ventilators. For example, I remember most countries had about, say, 10 ventilators for the whole nation, which was not enough. So it was only after this pandemic that there was this urgency to try to equip the hospitals. But I guess it was late, and some of the deaths that Africa suffered could have been avoided if the leaders were serious about the healthcare.
Vicente, do you think it was enough wake-up call that now maybe they may put the infrastructure, health infrastructure, in place? Or maybe because we saw at the peak of the pandemic, there were reports of corruption and government officials stealing money meant to alleviate the situation.
Indeed, I think that is very telling. The fact that, in fact, even at the peak of the pandemic, those people in positions of power saw an opportunity to steal. They were stealing funds that were meant to help mitigate the impact of COVID-19, monies that would have gone into developing health infrastructures. It is so disheartening because, to me, it tells me that while this also have been a wake-up call, and it was a wake-up call to some degree. Once this is over, those greedy politicians and their cronies who benefit from this kind of corruption will forget about it, because they will still have access. They will start having access to health services abroad. We've seen already when restrictions started to ease up a little bit, we have actually witnessed African politicians and leaders travel abroad for health, for medical care. So you feel like, yes, at the height of it, when everybody was so terrified, where nobody could go anywhere, there might have been some thought. I can imagine that, hey, perhaps it's time, it's high time we develop our own health systems so that people can be treated at home. But I fear that most of our people, especially those who get into power, they are so caught up in, you know, they're meeting their own selfish needs that they easily forget about the priorities at home and just focus on taking as much as they can so that they can give themselves the advantages of being able to go abroad for health care, sending their children abroad for education or to the most expensive school. I think it would be nice for the same leaders and the other, you know, citizens to kind of not let this pass. Use what has happened in the past as a clarion call for building health, the health systems on the continent, and reminding those leaders that there could become a time, there could come a time when nobody can go anywhere, just as it was a year and a half ago. Please, we need to develop our own health systems, so that everybody from a president to the peasant can have access to the same kind of health care. And hopefully somebody will get the message.
I see. Now, for those just joining us, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. Tonight, we're discussing the impact of COVID-19 in Africa. Our panelists are my colleagues, Vincent Macquarie, Managing Editor, TV English to Africa, and Blessing Zulu of VOA's Zimbabwe Service. And I'm your host, Douglas Mpuga. Now, gentlemen, another aspect of the impact of this COVID-19 pandemic is the impact it has had on school children. In most African countries, schools have been closed for close to almost 2 years. And we have had cases of child pregnancies. And some governments now are saying we can't take back the kids to school before we vaccinate everybody or all the teachers, which sounds a bit weird because they're just begging for vaccines. Blessing, how do you look at the impact of on education?
The impact has been very huge, but I think we must also state clearly that it's too early to assess the impact, because it might be ongoing. I mean, just looking at the vaccines, which are actually making a difference in most developed nations. But you note that, like the executive director of African Population and Health Research Center, Catherine Kiopodungi, said that, out of 100 people in a high-income country like America, 61 have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. In 29 low-income countries, that includes Africa and some Latin American countries, only 3 out of 100 people have received one dose of the vaccine. In the whole of Africa, about 10 out of 100 have received at least one dose, and only 4 out of 100 are fully vaccinated. So you can see that this will continue to have a devastating impact, especially on education, because African countries don't act to these vaccines. Of course, there's this vaccine diplomacy going on between Washington and Beijing, where they are giving some of these vaccines to African nations, but still it's not enough. So when schools are opened, we saw it in Zimbabwe and in South Africa, all of a sudden, you know, cases start going up. Some schools do not have even, clean running water, you know, which is essential to, people are urged to wash their hands, right? But people don't even have access to clean water. So this is impacting heavily on education, and this might be Africa's lost generation if nothing is done urgently to address the situation in schools.
Vincent, and this is an issue that you can't address or reverse in a short time.
It is a very serious issue because, you know, when you have kids, especially from poor families, getting pregnant and dropping out of school, and we're not saying they won't have to look for pregnancy. Some of these kids, because schools were closed and they had to stay out, were taken advantage of by people. Physical abuse, sexually abused, and we have that. This is almost as a crisis in countries across the continent, whether it's Kenya, Nigeria. We've been reporting on these issues. Now, what follows is that when these kids first get pregnant, in the case of the girls, and then they drop out of school, you are literally creating more poverty in the community. These are kids who are already from very disadvantaged families, and now they have a kid. It means this girl will never go back to school, most likely. And then now she is in a situation where there's an extra mouth to feed, and perhaps her parents have now to try and help feed this extra child. And that girl has to go and look for some other form of employment, maybe working as a housemaid or working on people's, gardens, in meaning her economic status may stay where it is or even worse with time. So we have thousands of children who have dropped out of school and may never go back to school. And as a consequence, their families will sink further into poverty and a serious economic hardship. Now, this is not something that you can solve very quickly. We will look back in time and there will be a generation that was affected this way by COVID-19, literally, that was either sunk deeper into poverty or, in fact, impoverished as a consequence of COVID-19. And this will be a whole generation that we'll have to deal with in the coming years, of course, unless there are programs that could be developed in the coming months and years to help alleviate the situation among the poor. So there is no question about it. I know there are boys also who have dropped out of school. We did some reports recently of kids who are homeless in the streets of Nairobi in Nigeria because they dropped out of school. And because there is that gap, even if the school's open, they feel left out. They can't go back. And they've ended up just going into the streets, engaging in some other activities. And there's some good people out there who are trying to help to reintegrate these kids back into the system. But there are a great number of young people who have been severely impacted by COVID-19, basically because schools shut down for long periods of time, and the kids coming from poor families did not have any other way of continuing their education. They got bored along the way, dropped out, and for the girls, some of them were just victimized by being abused, got pregnant, and that has changed the trajectory of their lives. And that is going to have a very long-term impact on their, not only on their families, but in the community and the country.
All right. Lastly, gentlemen, I want each one of you to comment, a brief comment on the lockdowns on the continent. Some of them don't make sense, and the restrictions don't make sense. Some countries now, if you're going there, you have to be, even if you have a COVID negative, even if you're vaccinated, they want you to be tested, and you pay at the airport. You again test you as you get out of that country. The curfews. Blessings, what do you make of these lockdowns? Briefly, do they make sense, some of them? Or it's just some people have said it's a copy and paste type of thing? Briefly.
Yeah, for most now, it's just a money-making venture because sometimes they're asked to pay $250, you know, just to get that COVID-19 test. And, you know, it's a global pandemic. Many people are struggling. A number of people lost their jobs, but to expect people to be paying that amount of money is really nonsensical, if I may put it that way. And, you know, some of the restrictions do not make sense. I think they can follow from what U.S. President Joe Biden has done to put it in the hands of the experts. And politicians, of course, they must stay away from making such decisions because it has been a disaster wherever they have taken the lead.
I say, what do you say, Vincent? Because in some countries like Uganda, for instance, the president stands up and closes schools but opens churches or betting places or gyms. So how do you make those restrictions?
That's what I think. There's so much contradiction, and sometimes it looks really ridiculous, especially when you claim you have a lockdown, but at the same time, where it suits you, you allow people to either to go to church, or in some other countries I've seen, like in Kenya, you have this lockdown, but then the politicians right up from the president will have these massive political rallies where nobody's wearing a mask and nobody even knows whether anybody has been vaccinated. We know that the numbers of vaccination across the continent are very low. So you can't have lockdown, which kind of only are imposed in particular areas or particular places in the society, but when the same people out there can be allowed to gather in other venues, in churches, I see that is a kind of in church, it's immune, or in a political rally, then people are immune from contracting COVID-19. So we have to say it has been kind of ridiculous. The double standards, confusion, no uniformity. So if it's going to happen, it has to be done in a more, a clear way. And there has to be honesty as to why are these being imposed, not for political ends, not just for show or just to satisfy the world that we also have in lockdowns. They really have to be made to work. And they have to be very realistic and not a business opportunity for others.
Yes or no, do you think this pandemic will end? Because some people have taken advantage of it.
Eventually, the pandemic will end, but we may have to keep living with the COVID-19 or COVID, forms of COVID. I think so.
A blessing. It's going to be COVID pandemic forever?
It will end, but I guess it will take time, because of the different variances and also the unequal access to vaccines. Maybe it might end 2024, 2025 in Africa. I don't know if, the new variants that are coming are not going to be problematic for the world, but eventually I think it will end because of the scientific advancements that we have seen lately.
Well, let's hope that is the case, and that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks to my colleagues, Vincent Makori, Managing Editor, TV English Africa, and Blessing Zulu of VOA's Zimbabwe service. Gentlemen, thanks very much as usual.
Thank you so much,
Douglas. You're very much welcome. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that you can hear our roundtable on the internet. You can access it by going to the Voice of America main website, click on programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@vonews.com. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Mpuga.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. Coming up, a conversation with the author of the new book, Move, The Forces Uprooting Us. I talk with Parag Khanna about his new book, which explores how the coronavirus pandemic, climate change, aging populations, political turmoil, and economic disruptions affect human migration. That's Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America. Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. Next up, the future of democracy in Iraq. In 2019, a popular protest movement swept across central and southern Iraq, pressing for fundamental electoral change and an end to corruption. The demonstrations forced early elections. Do they augur reform or much of the same? We talked with two Middle East experts about the implications of Iraq's elections. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.